Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here to talk about annuities, pensions, the TSP, and Social Security. What strategies provide strength to support retirements? Three-legged stool in one case, and maybe a two-legged stool in the other case, but we'll talk about that. And both co-hosts are here today. I'm Bob Lines. I'm with NITP, Tammy Flanagan, Senior Benefit Director, NITP, Co-Exec Columnist, Seminar Presenter, and knower of all things federal, Social Security as well.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Tammy. Okay, so what's the difference between an annuity and a pension? You know, I let out and I said annuities and pensions, and last week somebody was really kind of ticked at me and says, I don't have an annuity, I have a pension. And it was a first group, and I said, well, it, you know, technically is an annuity. No, it's not. One of the previous speakers called it a pension. And I go, well, I don't want to get in an argument. It's, you know, potato, potato. Why don't we move forward?
Yeah, I think when it comes to that, we all use different words to refer to the same thing. And it can trip us up sometimes. But when I teach about FERS, I always say, you know, you have these three parts. It's administered by three different agencies. You have three different benefits. And they all go by different names. So when we talk about the FERS basic benefit, which is the pension part of FERS or the annuity part of FERS or just the retirement benefit that's administered by the Office of Personnel Management, you know, no wonder why it gets confusing because some people will call it my FERS pension or my FERS retirement benefit or my FERS annuity. And I think even OPM refers to it as both in certain places.
The IRS form that comes to them from OPM says annuity.
Yeah.
And again, it's potato, potato,
yeah.
But
I think the important thing is not to know what it's called, but to know what it is.
Know what it is.
That's right.
But some might, the difference between, in theory, a pension has to be funded. And if it's funded and it doesn't make money or it isn't funded, there's not much pension.
Yeah.
I mean, the lousy example is Enron. It was funded and then company went down and the pension plan went away.
Right.
Governor Christie's just in the newspaper this morning in the Washington Post, and he has to face the voters and say, listen, we might not be able to fund the pension plan. Mm-hmm. And with the federal government, they do run deficits, of course, and they're somehow able to borrow money to fund the CSRS and the FERS and whatever else they might be, Title IV, military, et cetera, annuities. But they don't have the same issues that maybe a state does. They don't have to run out and find the money. They can do it.
Yeah. And we still have the tax revenues, but in all, and as you brought in this Congressional Research Service report that's done on a regular basis about the health of the Civil Service Trust Fund,
mm-hmm.
and it's still pretty healthy, according to Congressional Research Service, as they do that analysis of the Civil Service Trust Fund, which is that piece of the federal budget that pays federal retirement benefits and collects the money that employees and the government agencies pay in. So, you know, they're in pretty good shape compared to some of the other trust funds, such as Social Security and Medicare. So that part of it's not too scary.
For those of you all that like to look things up on the web, this is dated June 13th, 2013. And as Tammy indicated, this is not necessarily done every year, but we think it's done twice a year. And it's called the Congressional Research Service CRS Report for Congress. Again, the date of it is June 13th. And actually, that's where I pulled it off. I pulled it off the web.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we got a caller already.
I have a question on RMD.
Perfect.
Required minimum distribution for my TSP. I will be turning 70 and a half next March. And I assume that TSP will tell me what my RMD will be. The question I have is, can I satisfy a TSP RMD by withdrawing from a personal IRA that I own?
No. That one's easy. No.
Yeah. The TSP kind of considers itself as its own entity. So you're going to have required minimum distributions from your thrift in addition to meeting the RMD from all of your other investments collectively.
And one should not look at the TSP in a negative view here, because the TSP, while not a 401k, is the mirror image of it. So if you were calling and your question was, can I do this out of my 401k, Tammy's and my answer would be the same. No, they're treated as separate worlds.
And the RMD requirement will be different every year, I presume.
It's on a slow slope. The first year, it's about 3.65%. And the next year, it might be 3.8%.
That's the amount you have to withdraw.
Let's say you had, just round numbers, you had a TSP of $100,000. And you hit the RMD, you'd have to pull out $3,650 the first year. The next year, $3,800. Now, during this period of time, your TSP may be going up, down, or sideways. But once about eight years or so into it, then it hits about 5%. So, in other words, it's based on a life expectancy. And the the unfortunate truth is, each year we age, we get closer to the end. So.
But the life expectancy they give on that is 115.
And it keeps pushing it out right. 2 years. If they're 125, it'd be another 2 years. So, but the amount that has to come out is pretty substantial.
At that point.
So the theory behind the RMD, if this helps, is they have allowed this money to grow tax deferred until some date when it comes out. At 70 and a half, they feel that there probably isn't a lot of time left between that date and when somebody is going to check out and they would like to tax them before they go. So it's required minimum. You can take out more, but you can take out no less.
Yeah, if you're going to go ahead.
And I have to complete this by April 1 of 2016, I believe.
Right. Only the first year. And that year you would have to do April 1 and the next year, but you'd have to do another one by the end of December.
So two in that same year.
Yeah. If you're going to delay...
the same year.
If you hit 70 and a half in...
March,
and you hit it early in the year, they would like you to take it out before the end of that year. But you have a one-time, what was the Seinfeld thing? Do-over. and you can say, no, I want to take it out next year. I'd like my money to stay in there and grow. So you have to take out what you would have taken out, but you have to do it by April 1st of the following year. If 2014 is the year that we're talking about that you hit 70 and a half, let's just say that, you'd have to do it by the date in 2015, but you'd also have to take another one out by December 31st, 2015.
I see. And I could take it out in installments?
You can. Yeah, the TSP has two ways you can do it. You can either elect a monthly payment where you can even say, I only want $25 a month, and they'll calculate the RMD for the end of the year, and they'll send you once a year a supplement that would meet that minimum requirement. Or you can just choose to take life expectancy payout, which is computed on the RMD chart. So either way, you're going to meet that requirement directly from the thrift.
So TSP will make sure that I meet the requirement.
Mm-hmm. And you can go on to tsp.gov, and they have a retirement income calculator that you can calculate that payout, and it'll show it stretched all the way out till you're 115, how much you'd have to take out each year based on a certain assumption of how much interest you might accrue. So you can put in, if I accrue 4% or 6%, and it'll show your projected account balance.
Okay, but my TSP continues to accrue even though I'm withdrawing.
That's right. Yeah, it'll still be invested. In fact, you can still move it between the different funds as long as you don't buy a TSP annuity with it. That would be a different story.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
One other thing. Let's cross the road to the IRA world. I'm not going to ask you if you have any IRAs. That would be improper. But let's say that you did. And let's say that you had more than one IRA. Let's say you have an IRA in Investment House A and another one in Investment House B. The same rule applies to the IRA world, and they're all just considered, even though clearly separately held in different investment houses. That's what you got to take out, that same percent of that total. But what's nice about the IRA, if you had more than one, or maybe you should consider having more than one, use a general term, and have one just kind of in cash and the rest medium-term to long-term investments. You don't have to take anything out of those as long as you take out an amount equal to the whole. I don't know if that made sense, but that gets back to strategy.
I see. So I think what you're saying is that if I have more than one IRA, I can take out from one IRA the total amount to satisfy both of them.
Perfect. And gotcha. And the planning then, the one that you don't want to take out is the one that has medium to long-term growth. The one that you do want to take out of is the one that's probably more near-term cash.
I see. Very good. Very good. That answers my question. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for calling in.
Great question. You just started it off right.
Great. Thank you.
Sure enough. All righty, so let's go back to the difference between annuity and pension. And again, they're interchangeable, but at the end of the day, somebody's going to say, when I retire, what do I get? I just want a cash flow. The annuity is a guaranteed payment for life. The pension may not be, because the pension could run out of money. The pension could invest poorly. The pension, I'm not picking on New Jersey, but they're not the only one that has this issue. And people are then asked to take less.
But that's not true of the civil service pension.
No.
Don't get people worried.
That's why I say the annuity, and I call the CSRS,
and FERS.
The FERS or the offset or whatever they are. That's an annuity. That's a guaranteed payment. And who's the creditor? Uncle. Mm-hmm. Nice creditor to have.
Yeah, let me read this from that report. It says the Civil Service Trust Fund, that's the Civil Service Retirement and Disability Fund, is similar to Social Security, which may not make people feel more confident, but it is similar in nature to Social Security that by law, 100% of its assets are invested in special issue U.S. Treasury bonds or other bonds backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. And I think that's the key phrase right there, is that your retirement under CSRS and FERS is backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. And when the trust fund needs to cash to pay retirement benefits, it redeems those bonds, and that's how you pay benefits. And for last year, for fiscal year 2013, that trust fund had a beginning balance of $819 billion. And by the end of 2013, it had a balance of $832 billion. So it grew, and it continues to grow because it's taking in more money right now than it's paying out. And that's going to continue for the next 75 years. So it is in good shape.
Okay.
Yeah. Takes in employer contributions plus the employee contributions, and of course it pays out employee and survivor annuity payments and refunds for people who leave federal service or who pass away, and that money goes to their estate. And there are some administrative expenses as well that are very low, but that's very interesting reading if you like numbers and dollars.
No, it was came in handy on the thing I was doing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the next bullet point that we have on the website, it said, how does an earned annuity differ from a purchased annuity? All right, an earned annuity is a federal annuity. You earn it because you work a certain number of years, but no less than, what's the magic number? You have to work a certain number of years, but no less than
Five would be the vesting, yeah. Just depending on your age determines how much service you have to have earn the annuity.
Right, so it's based on years in service and, I think, highest compensation. Mm-hmm. Isn't that the way it works?
Right, and they call that a defined benefit. Because it's defined by your length of service and your salary, not so much by how much money you've paid in. Where the TSP is a defined contribution, and you can purchase an annuity with your TSP savings, but it's going to depend on how much money you have as far as how much you can purchase. So it's a different concept between the two.
Right. Now, the purchased annuity isn't really based on anything other than how old are you when you do this and how much money do you want to part with.
And how much the interest rate is that the insurance company or the whoever selling the annuity is assuming that they're going to earn.
So in today's world, we have something in the thrift where somebody could purchase the thrift annuity.
Right.
Now, the thrift board doesn't manage this. It goes to MetLife. MetLife's a solid insurance company. Able to sell annuities in all 50 states. That's important.
By the way, they've held that contract since the TSP started selling annuities back in the late 1980s.
Right, and they just won another five-year contract not a month or two ago, I believe.
Right. Yeah.
All righty. So, but you can buy an annuity. Let's say you don't like the thrift annuity for whatever reason. I'm not saying you shouldn't like it, but if you didn't like it, you could transfer the money to an IRA and buy an annuity through the IRA. But remember, that's based on when you bought it and how much you paid for it, and in a sense, how old you are. They don't usually ask you what sex you are, but it's not hard to determine in most cases. And so somebody would say, well, okay, I'm going to get that payment for life, but what if I maybe felt that I wasn't going to live a long time? Well, generally speaking, you can buy riders, especially with the thrift annuity, and the rider would say, if I was to die early, I could have a survivor's annuity.
Or and a cash refund.
Or I could have a cash refund.
Or it can pay for 10 years, whether you're here or not, which basically recovers your principal over that 10 years.
Right. And if you figure that you're going to live a very long time and interest rates are high, maybe it's not such a bad deal. Mm-hmm. Even the voluntary contribution can be put in and receive a greater pumps up your annuity that you earned and the earned annuity part.
Yeah, annuities, it seems to be more attractive to people who are in good health, because if you're in good health and you outlive your life expectancy, then you're going to get back more than what you paid in. Where on the other hand, if you happen to die earlier than your normal life expectancy, you may not even recover your principal. And you'd be more likely to be able to use that money in other ways if you didn't think, if you had poor health or family history that showed that there's a tendency not to live as long, perhaps. Although we never know.
All right. I was meeting with two people last week, Tom Lee and Dan Sipe, and they have an organization called Serving Those Who Serve, and they deal almost exclusively with feds. And they said, well, you know, the three-legged stool needs a fourth leg called strategy. So mm-hmm. they sit down and they strategize with their clients. And I was just kind of impressed that they wanted to put that fourth leg on the three-legged stool. I guess they would put the third leg on the two-legged stool.
That's becoming more common today, because you do have the three legs of whether you want to call it a pension or annuity. In the private sector, they call it a company pension, which many people don't even have anymore. In the government, we call it your civil service or FERS annuity. And then the second leg is Social Security income. And then the third leg is your savings, which for federal employees is the bulk of that is the TSP. So the point is you have these three different benefits that you can draw from at three different times. And so they don't necessarily all come into play at the same time. So in other words, when you retire under FERS, you might draw your FERS basic retirement benefit and then take a second career, which means you may not collect the Social Security benefit at that point or even take withdrawals from your thrift. But at the time you finally stop working, you have access to all three. And what their strategy is, you may not want to take all three at the same time, even though you're no longer working.
Right. Which gets into another article you wrote about, mm-hmm. and it's hyperlinked to our webpage, and it was talking about Social Security being one of the things that you would be looking at. The question is when do you take it? Mm-hmm. And then there was another article written by neither one of us, mm-hmm. and it said, Social Security isn't an annuity, but it's an annuity that you can continue to purchase even though you're not contributing to it anymore. So if you're retired, you don't have to take Social Security, and the longer you wait, it seems the greater the benefit for you. So
But I think the one thing you have to understand about Social Security is that it's designed to be actuarial. It's designed on a average life expectancy. And so whether you took it at 67, I took it at 62, and somebody else took it at 70, if we all died at 81 or about 80 and a half years old, we would have received the same amount anyway. So the key, again, going back to life expectancy, is if we live longer, then maybe we should consider waiting, because that larger benefit would get paid out over, more months, more length of time. So we would actually collect more if we waited a little bit than if we had taken it early.
That's an excellent point, because some people just look at the prize and say, I'm going to get more. Well, okay, you're going to get more for how long? Mm-hmm. Nobody knows the answer to that.
It could be 2 months. It could be 22 years. Yeah. And that's the thing, because you are taking a bit of a risk no matter what you decide to do with taking Social Security, which I think leads a lot of people, and this has traditionally been the concept of Social Security, is to get it while the getting's good. Like, as soon as I stop working, I'm claiming that benefit just in case, I don't live that long, or just in case Congress makes changes to it. And I think what financial advisors are trying to do today is to advise their clients to stop, you know, take a breath and think about that for a minute. Make sure that's what you really want to do, because there's other accesses to different types of money that might make sense to access your TSP a little bit early and delay Social Security so that you would have that rich check that's pretty much guaranteed for the rest of your life.
And Social Security, from a tax viewpoint, of course, that's the way I look at everything, but it's extremely tax efficient. At most, it's taxable 85% of it. That's not an 85% tax. So if you had $10,000 worth of Social Security income, you'd pay tax on $8,500. $1,500 would be tax-free.
Right.
In most, but not all states, but pretty much close to all states, they don't tax it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So as a source of retirement income, it adds actually more money to your ability to consume, better stated, spend, because it's less taxed.
Right. And it's also... I forgot what I was going to say. It came to my mind and I forgot it, but something about the fact that not only is it partially tax-free, but it's paid with full cost of living adjustments. So every year that you receive it, it gets a COLA, which, you know, if you were depleting a savings account, depending on the return on that investment, you may or may not get an increase from one year to the next, depending on how well your investment performed. But this is a guaranteed COLA. I should never use the word guaranteed because Congress can always change it. But it's pretty much a guaranteed cost of living adjustment every year that you start to claim Social Security. And even, and this is one thing a lot of people don't realize, if you delay Social Security till you're 67 or 70, they'll still add in the COLAs that you would have earned from the time you were first eligible at 62. So even though your full benefit amount might be $1,500 a month, when you turn 66, you'll get more than that because there may have been cost of living adjustments from 62 to 66, and you don't lose those, even though you've delayed claiming the benefit, which also kind of gives you more to the encouragement to think about waiting.
All right. May I ask you a question? If somebody's eligible for Social Security, but they don't necessarily want it, but they happen to be married, can the spouse elect to get a Social Security benefit even though the earner in this case isn't?
Yeah, there's some strategies, and there's one that's called file and suspend. There's another one that's called restricted application. And I'll explain them in a second, but you can't do either one of those until you're at the full retirement age. And when we think of Social Security retirement age, sometimes we think 62. But in this case, you'd have to be at your full benefit age, which is somewhere between 65 and 67, depending on when you were born. So let's assume husband and wife are both 66, which right now would be the full retirement age for somebody who was born in 1952, who's turning 62 this year. So we're both 66, and the husband, let's say, doesn't want to take his benefit yet because he wants to keep working till he's 70. So he can file for his benefit so that his wife can claim a benefit on his work record, but he can tell Social Security to suspend the payment of it until later, so he can then claim it later. And then her case, she can say, I'm eligible for my own benefit, but I also want to delay mine till I'm 70. So she could file a restricted application, restricting her application only to benefits on her husband's work record. So at age 66, she could take half of his while she's waiting until she gets older to claim her own, which is growing by what's called delayed retirement credits. And that's such a cool deal because the delayed credits increase your benefit a guaranteed 8% a year between 66 and 70. So if you delay that benefit until you're 70, that's a 32% increase just for waiting.
All righty. Does the spouse that would draw have to be a certain age?
Yeah, she or he has to be at the full retirement age. So if you're only 62 or 63 and a half when you do that, you're going to get the higher of your own or what your spouse has earned for you. So you wouldn't have the choice.
Okay.
But if you reach that full benefit age, then you can do those claim, file and suspend strategies or restricted.
I find there's mass confusion with that.
It's complicated. Yeah. I mean, even myself, I wrote about this the first time a few years back, and I thought I had it. I thought, I was like, I got this thing. And then I got a couple of emails from people who had been at Social Security a lot longer than I'd been studying it, who told me I was still a little bit off. So it is a complicated calculation, which is something you can discuss with Social Security when you claim your benefit. So you can start talking to them, you know, around age 60, 61, 62, But that doesn't necessarily mean that's when you're going to take the benefit. But get the information. Find out what you're entitled to. Find out on who else's work record you might be entitled to. It's not only your current spouse. You might be widowed. You might have a former spouse. And there are benefits payable in each of those situations, depending on how long you were married, if you've gotten remarried, and how much your own benefit is. So lots to explore.
Now, we got an email this morning, and so let's test it with what you and I just talked about. Mm-hmm. And emailers are always, they remain nameless. Mm-hmm. And it reads as follows. I'm a federal employee in the FERS retirement program. I'm planning to retire in a couple of years. And at that time, I plan to take a portion of my TSP and split it two ways, if possible, and leave the remaining in the TSP not to be touched for another 8 years when I'm 70. The following is an example of what I would like to do. Currently, the TSP balance is $600,000. The withdrawal desired is $300,000. I would like to purchase an annuity. Remember, we talked about an annuity is earned or purchased. This person is going to take $300,000 and buy an annuity with $200,000, which means of the $300,000 that was taken out of the TSP, then there's $100,000 left over, and they're going to use the $100,000 to pay off bills.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we want to get that out of our mind so that we can enjoy retirement. Again, we have a TSP balance, $600,000. I want to take $300,000 out. Of the $300,000, I'm going to buy an annuity with $200,000. And with the remaining $100,000, I'm going to pay some bills off.
Okay.
So here's the question. Please let me know whether this is possible. One, is it wise? Two, will I still have the tax deferral with the $200,000 of the withdrawal, which I plan to purchase an annuity? This is a really good question.
Yeah. Yeah. What he's doing is called a partial withdrawal, because what he wants to do is take some of the money out, in this case, half of it, and leave the other half for later use, like wait till he's 70. So with that half that he's taken out, he wants to use some of it to buy an annuity, which he won't be able to buy it from the thrift because he's not doing a full withdrawal at this point. He might do that with some of the other money later on, but what he's going to have to do is go out and find an annuity to purchase. And would he pay tax on that $200,000 that he uses to purchase the annuity?
The way this is framed, yes. So the $200,000.
Can he transfer it?
Well, that's okay. The way it's framed, okay. It doesn't say that. He says, I'm going to take it out. Mm. If you take it out, there's somebody at the door that says, time to pay me. Why?
Gotcha.
Because you haven't paid tax on the TSP yet. Mm-hmm. So that $300,000 is going to become $200,000 very quickly, if not less.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd have less to purchase the annuity with, which would, I'm sure the individual is saying at this point, I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. But like Tammy said, what if I took it out and then I transferred it to a traditional IRA and then I purchased the annuity through the IRA? Now, we've got to watch our fees here, but nonetheless, that would preserve the principal. So that we'd have the same $200,000, but we're going to buy the annuity from an IRA, which is not difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about what annuities to look at in a minute. And we can't recommend any, but we can talk
different types. Yeah.
Now, the other $100,000 that's going to be used to pay bills is going to be reduced to pay less of bills.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably going to have 65, maybe 70,000. If $100,000 on top of all your other income is going to get hit pretty hard with taxes.
Yeah, I guess you got to be careful when you take it out, because let's say he retired in September of this. When did he say? He didn't say when he's planning to retire, in a couple of years. But let's say he retired towards the end of the year, like let's say September, and he had already received his salary for 9 months of the year. Now he's going to take out another $100,000 on top of his salary, plus he gets paid for his lump sum annual leave payment. So he's probably in one of the highest marginal tax brackets he's ever been in his life. So I don't know, as a tax person, you would recommend it.
You're going to be in 28-33%. Some of it is probably going to eke up to 33%. But if you live in a state that has a state income tax, Ouch. Now, if you live in a state that doesn't tax money coming out of the TSP, like Pennsylvania, you don't care about state taxes, but it's the federal tax that's the big one.
Right. Two things I would say for that is, number one, does he have any other money that's already been taxed, like money in a savings account he could use to pay off his bills it wouldn't have to add to his tax burden? Or number two, transfer the whole $300,000 to an IRA and just pay off the bills a little bit at a time over the next few years, rather than try to take it all at once. What do you think of those two choices?
I really like that, but I'm going to try to read into the question. If some of your bills are very high rate, maybe
interest rates, credit card rate,
or a high loan rate, I'd attack those first. Mm-hmm. The other ones, if they're, if you will, a marginal rate, 3, 4, 5%, I don't think I'm in a rush to pay those off. And like Tammy said, you could do two things with the thrift. You could, like Tammy said, you could transfer the whole $300 into the IRA, or you can elect monthly payments. And there's the monthly payment is not what everybody thinks it is. It's a choice of two: a monthly payment that's actuarially determined, or it's a monthly payment that you determine.
Mm-hmm. And that's directly from the thrift.
Directly from the thrift, and the minimum amount that you would, that you have to take out if you elect this, is $25 a month. But you can change your mind every year. Mm-hmm. So we go back to Tammy's comment. Well, maybe I leave it back in there and I attack the big dogs first, and then if I'm paying 5%, I don't like it, but I'd rather earn 6 or 7.
Or here's another novel idea, because he says, I want to retire in a couple of years. So pay off those bills now while you still have a paycheck, and then retire once they're all caught up. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah. Now, I don't know. I think we answered the question and we really dissected it, but it is a great question.
And I have one more comment on it, though. It's kind of interesting because this was the book that we kind of reviewed last week, and mm-hmm. we're going to talk about a little bit more today. It's called Retirement Income, Risks and Strategies by an author named Mark Warshawski. And in his book, Mark has said, you know, something about the fact that annuity rates right now, because this is a very recent publication, are very low. You know, if you're going to buy an annuity with your money right now, you might get a 3% interest, maybe 2.5% interest rate, which in a few years, that might look terribly low. So what he also could do, if he's really intent on buying an annuity, is to buy a small one now, and maybe in a couple of years, buy another small annuity. So you don't necessarily have to just do one big annuity. So create different streams of income through different annuity programs, because the interest rates hopefully will go up in a few years. Maybe just create enough income right now that's going to meet his needs immediately. And then as life goes on and maybe expenses go up and income doesn't keep pace, then take another annuity.
Yeah, maybe. I tell the same tired war story, but I'll just never forget it. It was 13 years ago, individual, good managing money, Fed, called up and said, I'm retiring. And I said, yeah, I know. I just have to ask you, what are you going to do with your thrift? You're going to put it in an IRA and play the stock market? And the response was, no, I'm going to buy the TSP annuity. My response, not real educated, while it only pays 7.3% interest. Well, fortunately, the person is still alive. We talk 2 or 3 times a year. Every call starts with the same remembrance, but it's okay.
I learned a
good example. So right now, we're kind of at the opposite side of that. Interest rates are very low, and MetLife has to invest your money and has to earn more than what you could earn on it otherwise. Otherwise, you wouldn't buy the annuity. So, you know, it's not 0.5%, but it's probably not much more than 3, but I'm guessing at that number. I shouldn't guess. All right, we got another email, and this is this applies to the voluntary contribution. So FERS folks need not listen,
promised not to take too much time with it.
And they said, I listened to your show, and I liked the discussion on the voluntary contribution. And by the way, I went to an NITP retirement class and was very helpful. I didn't add that in. He wrote that.
He wrote that.
Okay. My situation is that I retired September 2013. On my retirement form, I checked the box, although I didn't recall its exact wording, to receive more complete information from OPM concerning my voluntary contribution account to enable me to make a more informed decision regarding my voluntary contributions. However, I never received any information, and it's too late. In other words, if they retired September 3rd, 2013, whatever you were going to do at the VC, you can't do. You're too far gone unless you've got a magic door key, Tammy.
Well, he didn't say whether or not his retirement had been finalized. And I know it's been almost a year. I mean, it's been 10 months since he retired, but that's not unlikely. I mean, it might be unlikely, but it's not impossible that his retirement could still be in process. Because they should, in fact, send him additional information about what he can do with the money. Because if you don't make an election, then the voluntary contributions is going to be converted to an annuity. Here we go with that word again. by OPM. And what they'll do is they'll take the money that he had put into these voluntary contributions, this voluntary savings account, and they'll convert it based on how many hundreds of dollars he has in there as a monthly payment and add it to his civil service retirement. So he never advised us in this email whether or not his retirement had yet been finalized. So I would still attempt to contact OPM and find out what the status is. You know, has it been finished? You know, did he get his annuity booklet yet from OPM? Because he should have been given the choice to move the money to his IRA or to cash it out or to buy the annuity if that was his choice. And if he wasn't given those options, I have a feeling his retirement may not be finished yet, which might mean there might be more issues with his retirement than just the voluntary contributions. So I think we need more information. So please email us again and let us know the status of that, and maybe we can help you some more.
All righty. And for those of you all listening saying, what's the voluntary contribution in your CSRS or CSRS offset? Tammy and I do a show each year. We update it, and I guess we're going to have to do one pretty soon for 2014. But I believe it was August 5th, 2013, that you can access it on the website. And it's not all on the voluntary contribution. Half the show is on that, and half the show...
Rollover IRAs.
So, and when you listen to it, there's a 26-page PDF on the website, and it just, we follow the forms page by page so that you can actually be staring at the same forms that you'd be filling out. And I just mentioned that. It's not, there's no commercials in it. All righty. So, two good questions. And then we have one from our good friend on the West Coast that I can't read all the stuff he sends me. It's really good.
He keeps
good
us
stuff.
Current. Yeah, he gives us all the latest news. He's like our news hound. It finds things.
All righty. And this one's short and sweet. It says, how important is getting the Roth IRA once one has maximized on the TSP and has done the catch up as well? In other words, we put as much money as we can into the TSP. I'd like to buy a Roth IRA.
Okay, but keep in mind, as much money as you can is a lot of money. That's $17,500 is the regular elective deferral limit, and another $5,500 is the catch-up, which you can do if you're 50 or older. So this is for people who want to put in more than $23,000 is what he's asking. So if you have that much money to invest, then is a Roth a good idea, or should you do traditional, or should you just put it in stocks and bonds in your passbook savings account?
Well, I'm probably the last one to ask that.
I know. Where's Joe Sullender?
I call one of the financial planners, and don't listen to me. I understand it.
I know.
But I'm extremely impatient, and if you buy a stock at 9:30, it should triple by 10, and if it went down 50%, you sell it and you're mad.
Then you buy mutual funds.
Yeah. All righty, and you listen to callers. So we've got a caller.
Yes. My husband and I are both CSRS retirees. My husband is 66. I'm in my late 50s. My husband does not have enough quarters under Social Security to collect his own benefit. Can he? But I do when I'm old enough to have a small Social Security benefit. Can my husband get a spousal benefit off of my Social Security now, or does he have to wait until I'm 67?
Okay. And the key thing was you said you were both retired under CSRS?
Correct.
That's the old system. Yeah, you're going to both be affected. Well, actually, he's going to be affected because he doesn't have his own Social Security. He's going to be affected by a provision of the law called the government pension offset. So even though technically he's entitled to spousal benefits off of your Social Security, he'll probably never get them. Because what will happen is when he goes to claim that benefit, Social Security will reduce it by two-thirds of his government pension. And so let's say your Social Security was $600 a month and he's entitled to half of that or $300. If you took two-thirds of his monthly civil service benefit, I'll bet you any money it's more than $300, right? Yeah, so, don't get your hopes up for that. Now, on the other hand, when you turn 62 and you have your 40 credits, you can claim your own Social Security benefit, and it'll be affected by this windfall provision, which is another provision of the law that affects you because you yourself are CSRS. But nonetheless, even though you're affected by the windfall, you can still collect Social Security. It'll be a modified formula. It'll be reduced from what you would think it would be, but at least you'll get something. And in my book, something is better than nothing.
Okay. And I was playing the wait, you know, because I am going to go back to work for a while. So wait till probably I'm in my later 60s.
Sure. And it'll just continue to grow because as you work now, you're paying into Social Security and all those wages will do two things. It'll increase your average lifetime wage and it might even help you avoid some of the windfall depending on how long you continue to work. So yeah, that's all good. But tell your husband I'm sorry, but he won't be able to claim spousal benefits. So he may need to go get a job too, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe not. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
All righty. Let's get back to the other question because it was a little bit of a loaded question. Roth IRA. Well, Roth IRA is an IRA, but the tax treatment is 100% the opposite of what a traditional IRA is. So your traditional IRA, anybody can put in whatever they make and they can still fund it. But the earnings would be taxable when they come out. And if their income is above a certain level and they're working, they can't deduct it on their tax return. A Roth IRA is really the reverse. You can't get a deduction on your tax return, even if you wanted to. But if your income exceeds a certain level, you can't put money into a Roth IRA. The reason being is when it comes back out, it's not subject to income tax. Now, there are strategies, and we're going to keep pushing strategies. Strategy here is a younger person would be more inclined towards this than somebody pre-retirement in general. There's exceptions to everything. But the question was, should I open up a Roth IRA? Now, as friendly as I am with this person, I'm not about to ask what his income is or anything else. We just have nice discussions on theory. Alrighty. So if our friend is married and the income on the return is over $191,000, they can't put money into a Roth IRA. If they're not married but single, if their income is over $129,000. You can't put money into a Roth IRA for that year. Now, this is a lot of money. If you're something called head of household, that's a single person, it has a special provision, their number is $129,000or less. They can put something in. More than $120,000, they can't do anything. Married filing separately, forget it. You can do it, but your income can't exceed $10,000.
But you could forget all of that and just do, if you wanted to do Roth contributions, just do it through the thrift.
It's true.
And then do the rest of your money you have to save maybe in a traditional IRA.
If you could get the deduction, you're going to give up the deduction. Now, deductions, I'm a tax person, but I understand economics comes far above taxes. So if you're kind of in a latter part of your career and you decide, I don't want to put as much money as I can into the thrift traditional because I get a deduction, but maybe I want to peel off $6,500 and put it into a Roth TSP, you can do it. It doesn't make any difference what your income is, but you will forego the tax benefit.
And by the way, you're not limited to $6,500. You could put the whole TSP contribution in the Roth TSP if you wanted to, but what you're saying is it may not be in your best interest because you wouldn't get to deduct it from your taxable income.
Yeah. Again, I'm talking somebody late, mid, or beginning pre-retirement. And I can just use a number example without driving people crazy. If you're lucky enough to be able to put $23,000, that's a lot of money into one of these things. Uncle Sam effectively sends you a check back for about $7,500 in a sense that you saved about $7,500 in tax if you did that.
Well, the other way to look at that is it only costs you about $15,000 or $16,000 to save $23,000.
But the reverse holds true if you want the Roth TSP, if you wanted to do it with the whole McGillis, so to speak. you'd have to come up with $30,000. And, you know, some people might have that. Most don't. But I get the question in, Clarice. I'm sure you do too, Tammy. And it says, I would like to do this. I can afford to do it. I want it for a legacy for my children or my friends or charity or whatever. Okay.
Yeah, I guess the biggest, like if you were just going to say, I can't save more than $23,000, we would probably both agree that maybe it should all go to the TSP. But the only reason why maybe somebody would divert some to an IRA is if they really wanted a broader investment choice, which you could argue whether or not that's really a logical reasoning.
All right. Yeah. And if you listen to our show from August 5th, 2013, we give you the way to not only maximize your traditional TSP and get the deduction, but if you had the money to also put it into a traditional IRA where you may not get the tax deduction, you can get it into a Roth IRA by the use of something called the backdoor Roth. Legal. Listen to the show. It gives you every way to do it.
It was a year ago, August, not this coming August.
Yeah, it was a year ago. Yeah. It was August, and we'll probably redo it again, hopefully this August this or September. It doesn't change, but it's nice to have the newer forms. So remember that term, and you could Google it as well, backdoor Roth. But the show is much better than the Google. Now, putting all these things into sync, Tammy, we you know, we talked about this, that, and another thing. Somebody listening to the show or some of the people in class go, how do I do this? Where do I go? There's programs that you can buy, but you have to understand your input into the program is going to come out, or excuse me, your input into the program is going to be as good as what comes out of it. So in other words, if you're not sure how to work these things, because they're going to ask questions about assumed inflation rates when you're going to retire, assumed earning power, et cetera, that's hard to do. Purchasing an annuity, on the other hand, you're paying somebody to manage the money for life.
Right. Yeah, you're basically giving up the liquidity of that asset in exchange for a lifetime payment, which a lot of people really don't like the idea of that, because here you have, you know, like in this man that wrote into us, he said, I have, was it $600,000? And so if you took that whole thing and bought an annuity with it, you'd no longer have $600,000. The insurance company would have it. And all you would have is a monthly check. But the reason why somebody might do that with some of their money, maybe not all of it, is so that if you needed $3,000 a month to pay your bills, and between Social Security and FERS, you only had $2,000 a month, well, that other $1,000's got to come from somewhere, and you need it the rest of your life, and you want it to have some hedge against inflation. So maybe create enough income through an annuity, perhaps, to do that. Now, of course, we've got financial planners who would argue that we could create that kind of income through our investments and keep it available. So depends on how you feel about managing your own money or paying someone else to help you.
Agreed.
Yeah, so the annuity does fit for some people, and there's different types. The type we have in the TSP in the private market is sometimes referred to as a single premium annuity, where you just take a lump sum of money, you give it to the insurance company, and you buy an annuity that starts immediately.
Okay, we have somebody on the phone.
My question is, what is the advantage of the TSP Roth, given that you must take that out at the same time you take out the TSP traditional money?
Oh, I see what you're saying, because when you make withdrawals from the TSP, you can't say, I just want to take it from the traditional thrift. You got to take it pro rata from all of your TSP money, right?
But,
yeah. So the one thing you could do after you separate is to transfer the Roth balance to an IRA and then take your distributions from the thrift plan just from your pre-tax dollars if you wanted to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can do that. So you'd have to find a place to park that money, maybe set up another IRA to receive it, or if you don't already have one. And that way you could distinguish the two funds. Right, Bob? Does that work?
Perfect.
Yeah.
I couldn't have said it better.
Yeah. And to do that easily, because the TSP has gotten a whole lot more complicated when you're making a withdrawal than it used to be, now that we have these two traditional thrift and Roth TSP. So if you make your withdrawal on the TSP website at tsp.gov, they have, they call it a withdrawal wizard. And so what it does, it eliminates some of the forms to fill in if they don't apply. So it'll ask you a question, it'll take you right to the next step of the form. And I think that's probably the easiest way to make a withdrawal from the thrift now that you have different balances. You have Roth balance and traditional balance. And you might want to do different things with both.
Okay, right. I'm going to add a little tax comment here. If you've never had, this, it can be a general comment. If an individual has never had a Roth IRA before, their first IRA established, maybe via this transfer from the thrift, has got to stay in there for at least 5 years or 59 and a half, and the big or is whichever is later.
Yeah.
So if somebody's calling and they're 60, they can do this, but they're not going to touch that money until
65. But they have the other money they could be using.
Got it.
Yep. Does that help?
Thank you.
Thank you,
yes,
for calling.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
All righty. Andrew tells us we have 2 minutes.
Uh-oh.
Where'd the time go?
I know. I was a little worried about today. I was thinking, boy, what are we going to talk about? But we never run out of things.
I don't think you and I should ever worry. I could listen to you for 52 minutes.
Well, same goes here. We've both been doing this long enough that we just keep learning. I mean, that's the thing. It keeps evolving and we keep learning. And I think that's what everybody should do. That would be my final comment, is to never stop learning. Never think that you already know enough that you don't have to learn anymore. Because I hear people say that. They'll say, oh, I was going to come to your seminar, but I already know all of that. It's like, how could you? I don't even know it all, and I've been studying it for 30 years.
And at the seminar, we won't call them tricks. There'll be opportunities.
Yeah.
We would never talk about being on the edge of legal.
Oh, sometimes it's one sentence that I'll tell somebody that made it worth their while to come for the whole day. Just one little thing that could save them money or make them more money in their retirement that they would have never known otherwise. And that's when it really makes your day, right? When you tell somebody something that helps them.
It's kind of like health. I never paid any attention to health till I was 35. You know, you can eat and you can do whatever you want. I don't think so. Anyway, what do we got, Andrew? 30 seconds? Okay, Andrew's saying, would you stop talking and get off the air? Anyway, Tammy, great to see you. And we'll be back again next week. Now, Tammy and I'll be here with two attorneys talking about transferring assets upon one's passing. Thanks, and have a good week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.